What is up, Nintendo Nation? We're back with another exciting N-Express. We're finally getting around to doing our favorite sorts of episodes, one of the Hall of Fame episodes, where we get to nominate some classic Nintendo games and put them in a special class all their own. So we'll probably get to that around the end of the show. Before we do that, we're going to talk about the Switch, which you guys almost out for an entire year. My baby is so old. It's crazy. It's kind of mind-bending. But before any of that, let's figure out what people have been playing. Those people are Patrick Murphy.
Hey, Tim. Are you that one of those kind of parents that just has to fawn over your baby? I'm over. The Switch is just, you know, it's just another thing around my house now.
It is just a thing around my house. But
just like any dumb kid would be.
It is super cool at the same time, and it's probably my favorite console right now. I say that with a little bit of hesitancy because I still really, really love my 3DS. But yeah, the Switch is phenomenal. Ricky D is also here.
What's up, Tim?
Not much. Not much. Really excited about this episode. Although I'm a little bit, I don't know. I'm kind of nervous. There have been a lot of good games that we've talked about. But when it comes to Hall of Fame, a lot of the times we want to nominate the same games. So I'm kind of like, do I have enough picks like in reserve? Are my backup picks going to be enough? We'll see. We'll see how it goes. Anyway.
Do you wear colored socks?
Sometimes.
Okay. I figured you would.
That's a really weird question.
Like I feel like Patrick wears like strict like black socks or white socks, but he doesn't go all colorful. But you, I can picture you with colorful socks.
You are absolutely right. I wear black socks. That is it, man. Black socks all the way. Colorful socks. Good God.
I mean, define colorful. Pictures of Pokemon on them? Yeah. Star Wars? Got those too. But that's it. Because I'm an adult man and I have some small measure of shame. Anyway, you guys, what have we been playing? There's still quite a bit on the Switch. There's a couple of games that we've been like slowly talking about. But Rick, what have you been up to on the Switch?
Oh, man, I've been playing lots of Rocket League. And now here's the thing. I picked up the game when it was first released on the PlayStation 4. I played like maybe 100 hours of the game. And then I got a little bored. So I never really went back to play the game. At the time, I was playing a lot with my nephew. And then the reason why I got it on the Switch, well, there's two reasons. Number one, it's because I really wanted a physical copy of the game because I do adore the game. And reason number two is because you can take it on the go. And so it's great. Like if I want to take my Nintendo Switch to work, the best game to play during our lunch break is Rocket League. Like, everybody gets into it. Even if they're not a gamer, they will play the game with us, right? So I've been playing a shit ton of this game. I think I picked it up about 11 days ago, and I put in about 22 hours, maybe more. So that's a lot of time, considering I work a full-time job, and I've been playing, like, lots of games. Does anyone have the game, first of all? Tim, you do, right?
Yeah, I played a lot of it on Xbox.
Right. We reviewed the game like way back, even though technically it was not on a Nintendo console. We still reviewed it on the podcast like 2 years ago. I love this game, like I said, but I've been playing it on the Switch. And the funny thing is, one of our former editors, Michael Reiser, he was on Facebook and he was talking to me about Rocket League, and he picked it up when it first came out on the Switch, and he said he had lots of problems with the game. I haven't had any problems with the game. Now, I've picked it up 11 days ago, so that's like a full like 30 to 40 days after it was initially released on the Switch. So right as of now, I have not had one problem whatsoever playing this game. When I get online and I find like a match within like, I would say 15 seconds. I'm playing cross platform. So I'm playing, for example, with my nephew who plays it on PC or on Xbox. I think it's great. Like, I don't see any problems with the release, like the actual release of this game on the Switch. It feels just as smooth and it's just as fun as playing it on the PlayStation. I think, Patrick, you should pick up this game because I think you would actually like it. And we can actually set up a tournament, which I want to start doing very, very, very soon, maybe even this weekend, in which we create a private room. And so I would give you the address / name of the room and the password. And everyone joins that private room. We can have like a private match just between the Goomba Stomp Riders. It's super, super fun, dude.
I'm not sure I'll ever be able to play any more video games, period, this year with Skyrim. That's taken over my life.
Okay, well, you're playing a lot of Skyrim. I'm playing Rocket League. I feel the same way. Like, I feel like I'm putting way too much time into this game. But that's a good thing. So, like, you're still into Skyrim, eh?
Yeah, yeah. I love this game. I am totally going to... I'm going to be in this one for at least a good 100 hours. I'm not saying it's going to... It's quite taken me, like, Breath of the Wild. Because, you know, it's an older game. So, of course, it's designed... It's got, you know, the limitations of design back then. And I was spoiled by Breath of the Wild, obviously, the sort of the freedom that you have. But this is, it's a really, really cool world and a lot of cool stuff going on. And yeah, I'm totally, totally hooked on this game. So glad I picked it up.
Andrew, I was reading one of his articles. He wrote about, what did he write about? We're writing a series now over at Goomba Stomp. It's called Games That Changed Our Lives. And he was saying in this article that he put in 740 hours into playing Skyrim.
It's oh my God.
And Andrew, like anyone who knows Andrew, like Andrew plays a shit ton of games. Like he's, you know, I don't know if he's like the most hardcore of hardcore gamers on our website, but he's on the top five, if not top three. And yeah, he put in 700 plus hours.
That's a month. That's a month straight of playing that game. Never resting, just one solid month. That's incredible. I will not be putting in 740 hours into this game. I'm going to max out probably about 100, but, you know, that's pretty good still.
So here's the thing. Going back to Rocket League really quick, Tim, I now understand why gamers are always so angry. Because I started playing Rocket League online. Now, I don't play games online. I don't play Overwatch. I don't play Destiny. I don't like playing online. I don't want to talk to anybody who I don't know. I don't want to hear people cussing at me. But I started playing Rocket League online, and I gotta tell you, every single day I was in such a bad mood at the end of the day. Like, I totally get it now. Because when you're playing with an AI, right? Like, if I'm playing Rocket League and my AI messes up, like, say he scores on his own net, like, it's like a computer. So for whatever reason, you don't just get, like, you might get frustrated, but you're not getting mad at someone because it's just, like, the Switch, the AI, right? When you're playing Rocket League online and some guy scores on his own net, like, it gets you so mad. Or you have these dudes that just stand in front of the net and they try to score. Like, they just stand, like, they don't even, like, play the game. They just park their car in front of the net and wait for a cheap goal. Like, it pisses me off.
Yeah, cherry picking.
Oh, my God, I hate it. I got a question, though. Okay, actually, I have two questions. Number one, I'm averaging 2 to 3 goals per game, and I'm still ranked semi-pro. How come?
I think it's like, if I remember right, it's been a long time. You have to just play like a bunch of matches to get out of semi-pro. So it has less to do with like performance, and it's more to do with, I think, the amount of time and amount of wins.
Okay.
And that's how new ranks are unlocked. Like, you hit a certain amount of wins, and then you get... Correct us, listeners, but... If I remember right, that's kind of how it worked.
Because I've played 22 hours. Now, to be fair, I've played 22 hours offline as well. I mean, 22 hours offline and online. My second question is, I was told that no matter what car you choose, they're all equal. Like, it's just cosmetics, right? So if I take, like, the Luigi car or the Samus Aran car or the Batmobile or the DeLorean or whatever, all cars go just as fast and can jump just as high. I do not think it's true at all. Because when I play with the DeLorean, I'm going faster than everyone else on the track.
That's probably just how you're perceiving it. I think they all are the same speed. And, like, I remember my brother used to play with a van because he was like, reasonably, this would have a bigger hitbox and make it more likely for me to hit the ball. But I don't even think that's true. So I think they are all basically the same cars, just reskinned. Same hitboxes, same jets, everything.
There's no way. When I play with the DeLorean, I always get the ball in the center at the beginning. You know, the center ball, whatever you call it?
Yep.
Always, yep. Always. I get to the ball first.
And it might be just you're being matched up with Switch people who aren't as good at the game, haven't gotten as much practice. Do you just boost and do like a little jump at the very end to like gain a little bit more momentum after that too?
Maybe you know you're driving the DeLorean, so you believe in yourself just a little bit more,
well,
Rick.
No, but that's the point I'm trying to get at, right? It's like I'm trying to figure out if it's just my imagination. Like, am I just imagining that I'm going faster? But every time I play with the DeLorean, I get to the center. Like at the start of the game, Patrick, there's like a face-off, right? So if I'm all the way in the back, like right in front of the net, and I'm like the furthest away from the ball, I will still get to the ball first. And so that's why I'm like, it's got to be the car. And the thing is, Tim, like, I do have my own sort of little trick. I don't know if that's the reason why, because I do the exact same thing when I play with, I don't know, my my Dodge Challenger, for example, which is actually my favorite car, and I prefer to play with Dodge Challenger. But for some reason, a DeLorean just seems to go faster. It could be in my head. So, yeah, anyhow, I love this game.
Does it go 88 miles an hour?
I think so.
And you really can't lose with it, because anytime they score a goal, you just go fast enough and undo it.
But I am playing cross-platform, so I am playing with people who've been playing this game for like 2 years, like on the Xbox or PC. And quite often I get paired with someone who's like a veteran or a prodigy or an expert, you know, so it's not just like pros or semi-pros, it's or rookies, it's like everyone. And funny enough, a lot of times we'll have someone who's a pro or a veteran or a prodigy, and we'll have like a rookie, I'll have like a rookie on my team or semi-pro, and they'll do a better job and actually win the game. Not always, like sometimes, like, you know, there's someone that's a pro and or actually a veteran, and you understand why, you know what I mean? Like, he's got like 94,000 goals. I was thinking, like, I want to get to the top 25 if possible. In order to get to the top 25 worldwide ranking, at least according to like Xbox, PC, and Switch, because Sony doesn't want to do cross-platform, I would need to score a minimum of 90,000 goals.
That sounds doable. I'm just kidding. I have no idea.
Well, the problem is that whoever scored 90,000 plus goals is still playing the game. So they're still scoring goals. So I don't think I'll ever catch up.
Well, yeah. Unless you Travis touchdown them. I will tell you this. When playing Splatoon, it was the exact same way. Often the lower ranked people, and I was always one of the lower ranked people, would outdo the higher ranked people. And they're just putting the time in. I'm not sure it was so much skill as just like longevity. That was it.
There's definitely something to be said about, there's like the certain type of person that'll play a game and put in a lot of time, but just do what they do in the game. And then there's the other sort of person who puts in the time, but also is truly learning the game and growing and expanding their skills. And I think that, like, it doesn't matter if you're talking about like Overwatch or Rocket League, anything like that, that's always going to be the case. There's always going to be that person that, like, puts in a lot of time, but is ultimately not good at the game when it comes to, like, true finesse with the thing. And I play a lot of Overwatch, you guys. I've seen a lot of people with, like, hundreds and hundreds of hours sunk in, and I beat them, rip them to shreds. I'm like, you haven't spent the time just learning the game. Or maybe they're a little kid. I don't know the story, but time in-game doesn't necessarily mean quality of player.
But that's the problem with Rocket League. Like, they're ranking you based on how much time you play. And I find that problematic. Like, for example, I don't have a history of how many goals I've scored online. Like, so I think that, like, for example, if I pick my DeLorean, it will show me how many wins I've had with that car and how many goals. No, actually, it only shows me how many wins I've had. And I was thinking, like, it would be fantastic if it would record your statistics and rank it based on your statistics, not how much time you play. Because, like you said, someone can play 100 hours and still might not be as good as I. So it's just bizarre. I've been playing Night in the Woods, which I do not want to talk about this week. We've been trying to get one of our editors, Kyle, on the show so we can have a little debate over the game, because as you well know, this is a beloved indie game. It got released last year, got released on a Switch earlier this year. It's a beautiful game, and I fell in love with this game right away, and I right away fell out of love with this game. And so I really want to have, I want to have a discussion about this game. Patrick, you know how we've spoken many, many times about story-driven games, games that are driven by narrative and characters, click-and-point games, games like Life is Strange and Oxenfree, games that do not interest you, and I'm always trying to persuade you to give them a shot, give them a chance. This would be the worst game I can give to you to try to convince you that these games are actually good. And I really want, like, we're going to talk about this in probably next week, but just a little teaser for our listeners. So this game looks beautiful. I'm sure you've seen screenshots. It's got one of the best soundtracks. The opening theme song alone sounds like something that came out of Twin Peaks, the TV show. It's got great characters. They're very lovable, very charismatic. The problem with this game, it's such a slog to play. So it was like a great first impression. The first 2 hours was like, yeah, I can get into this. And man, it's just like walking back and forth between the exact same rooms, the exact same scenery, the exact same three stages in a town. It goes so slow. There is loading time in between just about everything. Go into a room, loading time. Leave a room, loading time. Move to the next section of the town, loading time. Move across the screen, loading time. Go play a mini game, loading time. Like, it's just the pacing of this game is terrible. And like, I feel bad. Like this is, it's not a bad game. Do not get me wrong. There's a lot of good here. And again, we're going to talk about this next week. But just be warned, if you do want to buy this game and you're not into these character-driven, story-driven, click-and-point adventure games that move at a slow pace, this moves at, like, a snail's pace. It's just really problematic for me. I can't finish it. Like, I put in about 4 hours. I think it's about a 10-hour-long game, and I just can't get into it. And there's, like, a mystery, like, this mystery that you're supposed to solve, and you're supposed to figure out what happened to this character. And just, like, as much as I adore these characters, I would much prefer watching, like, a Wes Anderson film, like Fantastic Mr. Fox or something, because it just moves so goddamn slow.
Yeah, these games just aren't for me. I would never say they're bad because I just don't like them, period. I don't like the genre at all. I mean, you bring up exactly what I've said in the past when it comes to narrative-based games, games that rely overly on narrative. This game, I can't speak to it because I have not played it, but sometimes I think these games would have been better off being just an animated movie or something like that. That the gameplay might not even be necessary in order to convey the story in the best way possible. For the ones that really rely on story,
there's a difference between Oxenfree and Night in the Woods, and I know you haven't played Oxenfree either, but Tim and I are huge fans of that game.
I thought Tim didn't like it.
No, I actually did like that one.
No, you did. Okay.
Yeah, walking sim that I enjoyed.
Mike hated it because it's always feeding you information about the characters, about what happened to these people, like, and as it's feeding you this information via text bubbles and dialogue, it's got this great atmosphere. It's also a very short game. It's about 3 to 5 hours long. I think I finished it in like 4 hours.
Yeah, I think it took me four.
This game, like, you wake up, you know, you go talk to your mom, you talk to your dad, you walk around town, you talk to people, you go back to your room, you go to sleep. You wake up, you rinse and repeat. Go back to your room, wake up, rinse and repeat. Like, there's, like, little different scenarios that change, obviously, as it starts to expand. But it's just, like, the pacing. It's all about the pacing. It's so damn slow. And I don't know if it's a Switch problem, which is why I want to talk to Kyle about this next week, because apparently it's not this slow on PC. Like, it doesn't have the same, problems with, like, loading time. But I'm like, how could this be a Switch problem? It's not, like, a huge game like Breath of the Wild or even Doom.
No, but even World to the West, that game that I reviewed a couple of weeks back, it did not seem like a technically challenging game, and that had loading screens with every single thing that you did. Some people, I don't know, I'm not going to say as to why some of these things are happening. I don't think it's a Switch problem, I think it's a development problem. But maybe the port didn't go perfectly well, who knows, I have no idea. But I do know that pacing is huge when it comes to storytelling for me. And that's why, yeah, you're right. I won't even, good tip,
yeah.
won't look into this one.
Nope, not interested.
Yeah, if you are interested in a very, very good indie horror game, I do recommend Layers of Fear. Which,
I've seen a lot of emails in my inbox about Layers of Fear.
So, like, I first played the game, I think it was right before Christmas. My nephew had it on PC. I was, like, ecstatic when I found out it was getting released for the Nintendo Switch. I bought it on, I think it was, like, Friday night. It's a very short game. You can finish it in between, like, 3 to, like, 7 hours, say. So it's all done in, like, the first-person perspective. So you play the main character. It's his point of view. You're trapped in a house, sort of like Gone Home, sort of like a click-and-point game. Like, you use the cursors to open doors, unlock cabinets, find keys, pick up random shit that's scattered throughout the house, and there's, like, this mystery to it, right? But it has some of the best sound effects and sound design in any video game. And this is, like, an independent video game, like, indie made. I think it was made by, like, 3 people. And it's all about the sound design. It's like when you go see a good horror film, and what makes you jump, what has you gripping onto the edge of your like seat, it's the sound, it's the atmosphere, the ambience, right? And that's what this game is all about. And there is a mystery to it. Like, you're playing this painter and you're trying to figure out what happened to you and your family. And it's got this like Victorian, like gothic setting, which is really cool. It's got really, really cool visuals and amazing like visual effects throughout the game. And it's just like, dude, it's creepy as hell. Like, it's not as good as, say, Resident Evil 7, which I think is one of the greatest horror video games ever made. I adore that game. That game not only made my top 10 last year, but I think when I submitted my ballot for the Games of the Year list, I put it in second place right after Breath of the Wild. It was, like, that good. Like, I love that game. It's not as good as Resident Evil 7, but, again, it's a little indie gem, you know?
Yeah. Oh, sorry. I thought you were saying Resident Evil 7 was as good as something. Yeah, I'm really jealous that Resident Evil 7, that I can't, you know, haven't been able to play that. I kind of wish that would, I wish that was possible to port to the Switch. There's another game that's out for the Switch that's kind of a horror game that I played at E3 last year, indie game called Detention. I had no idea it was coming out for the Switch back then when I played it.
It's not out yet. It comes out in 2 weeks.
Okay, yeah. So that was from what I played, that was a game that took place in a South Korean school that, where things have gone horribly wrong.
I read about that one. That one looks rad.
Yeah, it had a great atmosphere, and it had some interesting mechanics to it. It was mostly a point-and-click thing, but it had there's some weird creatures in there, and you kind of have to hold your breath to get past them. There's even a button for holding your breath, which is kind of weird. But it worked, and it even in the midst of the hustle and bustle of E3... I was, you know, sucked into the atmosphere. So people looking for that kind of story-driven horror game, that's another one to keep an eye out for anyway.
Yeah, I think, I'm not sure if it was Kyle, someone wrote a review of that game on our website and gave it like a 9 or a 10. Like some really, really high score.
I think Katrina did that one.
Right, okay.
Yeah, because I had passed, they had given us a Steam code, I believe, from E3. And so I think she reviewed it way back then.
Yeah, but like the difference between Layers of Fear and Night in the Woods is this is the game where it never really stops moving unless you stop moving, because you're controlling the character the whole entire way. Like, you're controlling the character at all times. Like, you don't have to wait for a screen to load. You don't have to talk to anyone. You don't have to click through a bunch of like dialogue bubbles because no one really talks. You do get like flashbacks and weird hallucinations throughout the game, but you never really stop moving. And I think you can honestly finish this game in about 3 hours if you really just like speed through it, but no more than, I would say, 7 hours. And again, like, it's all about the pacing. Like, that is why I never got bored.
Mm-hmm. Having no loading screens helps a lot. Loading screens, I think, kill narrative-driven things. Kill.
And we said it before, but if Breath of the Wild has no loading screens, what's your excuse, really?
Right. I think the reason why a lot of people do not like the click-and-point genre, these games just driven by narrative, and they seem more cinematic or like comic books coming to life and you see the pages unfold on the screen, right? It's because you're not really in control of the game. So you have to wait for the characters to talk. You have to wait for whatever happens to happen, like the cutscene or whatever, to move, even if it's just like 3 steps forward. And even like to some extent, like even a game like Life is Strange has this problem. But like the games that do it well just find a way to have the player progress through the game and move through the game and still find ways to tell the story while you are still in control of a character moving around. And that is what this game does. It's like Resident Evil 7. It's like, you know, it's a point of view survival horror video game in which, you know, you walk through this creepy old house and all this shit happens and characters will chase you and there's a backstory, but it's always happening as you're still controlling the character.
Sounds pretty cool. I'll have to look out for that one. Patrick, have you been playing anything else?
Just Skyrim, dude.
Just Skyrim?
There's a little bit of everything in that game. There's story, if you want it. There's horror, if you kind of, you know, want it. There's certain caves that have a little bit of horror to them, I think. There's pure action, spectacular, epic, Lord of the Rings style stuff, if you want that. There's romance, of course.
What are those, like, weird witch bird ladies?
I don't know. I haven't seen one of those yet.
Oh, if you see one, finally, that's what I'm talking about. Those things are freaky.
I've been staying away from dragons. I finally just killed my first one, or second one, I guess. But my first one on my own last night. Killed a few vampires. Was kind of surprised when a dude turned into a werewolf once. sure Skyrim veterans are not thrilled by any of this stuff, but it was cool for me. I mean, I was just walking along minding my own business one night, Tim, and all of a sudden, out of the blue, a hellhound attacks me, followed by a vampire, and I was like, what the hell is going on? It's really weird how you can, and then I got killed, of course. Then you can walk over the exact same ground, and different things will pop up. It won't just be the same character that's back there waiting for you. It'll be other characters for some reason that are traveling or whatever. You know, some other douchebag, some from some other kingdom that laugh at me because I'm not part of their kingdom. There's lots of just a variety of stuff going on, and I love that aspect of it. It's a big world to explore, and I've noticed that, you know, for as big of a game as it is and for as old of a game as it is, we're talking about loading screens, they're really not bad for Skyrim. They're actually very, very good. It's pretty quick. Once the game actually initially loads, and it's not even that bad of an initial loading time. Once it initially loads up, and it takes about as long as Breath of the Wild did for that to happen, it's pretty good. Yeah, when you go into a cave, there's a loading screen, but it isn't very long, and if you walked right back out, say you just walk into the wrong cave or the wrong house or something like that, it loads super quick on your way back out. I mean, it almost doesn't take any time at all. So it works pretty fast. I don't know how it was on the 360, but it's pretty damn fast. I'm pretty happy with that too. The pacing of the gameplay is pretty good.
It was definitely manageable.
Is this the remastered version?
I think it's like a halfway in between.
Yeah, what it PS4 is half.
Pro got and what the 360 is. I feel like they did some work on it, but because I also have not noticed any bugs, by the way. Like, nope.
I went to the store to buy Skyrim, and the reason why I didn't buy Skyrim was because Skyrim was $79.99, which comes to about $92. I always use the magical 92. It's the number I always complain about here in Canada. That's how much a Switch game costs. But usually a first party exclusive game like Odyssey or Breath of the Wild or even like Pokken Tournament cost, you know, the $79.99 plus tax equals $92. Skyrim was $92. And for the PlayStation 4, it was $20.
Oh, yeah, you can definitely get it cheaper on the PlayStation 4. I mean, it's costing a lot because it's on the Switch. I think that's the key here. And plus, like, Nintendo games just never go on sale, especially at brick-and-mortar locations. But I will say this, for a game this old, I paid full price for this thing, and it could have come out yesterday, and I'd still be thrilled with this game. It looks great.
I'm just trying to figure out if I want to buy it for the Switch. Like, I'm undecisive because I can save, you know, like, and be smart and save, like, $70 and just buy it for the PlayStation 4.
You probably should save the $70 if you're going to get it. Because in fact, you'll probably be able to get a better version for the PS4. Like, yeah, a visually better version, even if it's just slight. And I'm sure, again, it's not like the loading. The cartridge may have something to do with that. I don't know. But I think it's probably not worth enough for you to spend an extra $70 unless you really plan on playing this on the go.
Exactly. It's all about where you want to play it.
Exactly. Like, it's not even so much about playing it on go. And I actually want to ask you guys this very soon. It's like, well, I'm going to ask you now. How often do you plan to go? But before you answer, see, the thing is I don't, at least not right now, because it's still wintertime, although today was like springtime, like winter is coming to an end here in Montreal. But I do not like to take my Switch out when it's raining or when it's snowing or when it's like super cold. And I've mentioned this on a show plenty of times. It's hard for me to take the Switch and play it, say, on the train going to work because I can never find the seat, right? But I think when the summertime comes or when springtime comes and it gets warm outside, I am going to be taking my Switch out on the go a lot, because that is what I did last year. Remember when the Switch came out? It came out on March 3rd.
Mm-hmm.
And I was taking it out like on the go all the time. And so that's the thing. Like, I'm thinking, like, maybe because Skyrim is a game that's going to, like, I mean, it's like Rocket League, right? Like, that's a game I can play like 200, 300 hours. But the thing is, I like to play online. So, you know, I know I'm not going to be playing Rocket League when I'm on the bus or Switch or at the basketball court or sitting at church or at a hospital or whatever. Because, I mean, I could, but I would much prefer to play online. But with Skyrim, I can play it on the go. So that's why I'm undecided. So anyways, the point is, you guys still have to answer a question, but the point is, I ended up buying Pokken Tournament DX finally, Tim. Yeah.
I got way
too many games on my Switch to play. It's so good. It's so much better than the Wii U version. I cannot play anything on the Wii U anymore. Like, it's crazy how, you know, we loved the Wii U because it had such great games, but when you started playing a game like Pokken or even like Mario Kart 8 Deluxe and you compare it to the Wii U version, you realize the difference between these two systems and how much better the Switch is. Pokken Tournament DX is so much better on the Switch, if only because when someone comes over and plays, they don't have to like stare at the gamepad while I stare at the computer screen. You know what I mean? Or you could just like each have a Switch and it's faster, it's got more characters, just everything about it is better.
I like it could be in my head, but I swear it looks better too.
It looks better. It does. It does.
It might run a little bit better. Just like Bayonetta 2, I think runs at a solid 60 frames where it did not on the Wii U. And it makes me really, I mean, I saw some people playing Bayonetta 2 and I was like, God, that looks better than I remember it. I kind of want to buy Bayonetta 2 again.
And I probably will here sooner or later. It's just a matter of time and getting some other stuff off of my plate. You guys, I played two different Nintendo consoles all week. Neither of them were my Switch, though. So, get this. I played my SNES Classic to play Secret of Mana.
Very cool.
If you want to hear what I think about that game, go listen to Game Boys, episode 94.
You should. I listened to it last night. It was a great show. But I just want to say that if you ever do play that game, don't play the new version. Play the original, which you can get the original on the Wii Shop if it's still in business, and or on your Super NES Mini if you can find it.
Yeah, which hopefully you can. And the other game that I played a lot of, and I'm going to plug this really, really fast because I've said enough already. I've been playing Pokemon, you guys.
Which Pokemon?
I'm playing Sun and Moon right now and finishing up a gym leader challenge, as I call it, where I only use one type of Pokemon. Just been playing with bug Pokemon, never beat that game. So I was like, okay. I mean, to be clear, I just didn't beat that file. So I've been going back and playing that just in time for Pokemon Day, which is today, the 27th. So happy Pokemon Day to all you Pokemon trainers out there.
So are you playing Sun or Moon?
This one is Sun. I already beat Moon.
Okay.
And I also have a file on Ultra Moon going.
Oh, okay. So you have Ultra.
Yeah. And so this is just my old Sun file that I like was playing, and then Ultra Moon came out. And I was just like, oh, I want to play Ultra Moon. Never mind. So yeah, I went back to this one, and I'm at the very end, but it's fun. It's like a fun challenge that I placed on myself. I'm only using bug Pokemon, and it's great.
I know. We should direct listeners to listen to the Game Boys podcast, but can you, and I know what you think because I listened to the show, but can you summarize your overall thoughts of Secret of Mana?
It is, yeah, very quickly, it's a phenomenal game. It's really, really great, super influential, but I don't think it quite matches the hype that I had heard for the game up until this point. It's not, I hate to say this, it's not Chrono Trigger, it's not A Link to the Past, it's not Final Fantasy VI, it's got a lot of, some of its aging, it shows, like, right away. Some of the menus are very, very wonky, some of the decisions in the game, I totally disagree with, but the core gameplay, the characters, the score, the colors, all brilliant. So
yeah, well, that's the thing, like the characters, the score, especially the score, the visuals are brilliant, especially for the time. But I agree with you, it doesn't age as well as like Chrono Trigger or some of the Final Fantasy games or even like the earlier Zelda games. But the reason why that game was so special when it came out for most of us was because you can play co-op mode.
Yeah, exactly.
I was going to say, like, it's hard to compare it to A Link to the Past or Final Fantasy VI or any of those other games or Chrono Trigger because it's a different type of game. It really was a co-op game. If you were playing it by yourself, you weren't getting the full experience. But as a co-op game, it really was kind of magical.
Yeah, especially at the time. But in a day and age where we have a lot of co-op RPGs that don't completely stall the game when you pull up your magic menu, it's a little tough, you guys. It's a little tough.
Did you guys ever play the game that came out after? It was kind of its spiritual successor, Secret of Evermore.
No.
But then again, I've never played the Final Fantasy game of which this was a spinoff of.
Oh, Final Fantasy Adventure, which is an awesome game. Got probably the guy with the coolest hair in all video games. that was the main character of Final Fantasy.
I was trying really hard to come up with the dumbest counter argument that I could, but I just couldn't quite get there. I was like, man, who has a horrible haircut in a video game?
Look up the guy, the picture from the guy in Final Fantasy Adventure, coolest hair ever.
All right, I'm doing that, but before I do that, you guys, I'm sending us on a break. When we come back, a look at a year's worth of the Nintendo Switch. So don't go anywhere. Welcome back to N-Express. We're at our middle segment where we're going to talk about the Switch because, you guys, it's just about the birthday of the Switch. By the time you're listening to this, it may well have passed. March 3rd was the day that it came out just last year, 2017. And, man, what a special day that was. I don't think any of us were quite sure what we were going to get with the Switch. We all had confidence that Nintendo was going to launch a really quality product, and that we were going to get it and play Nintendo games on it, but we weren't sure the support and the numbers of units that this thing was about to sell. So a year later, I don't think I could have anticipated how good a story this is, that the world actually bought in and it's not just us as a bunch of crazy Wii U fans anymore.
I don't think anyone could. And remember, I wrote an article about this, more so about the success of the Switch and the sales and the marketing, et cetera, et cetera. We talked about it, I think, 3 weeks ago on the podcast. But I did not really have much faith in the console, because if you remember when they had the Tokyo event, I was not impressed. I was not impressed by the Joy-Cons. I was not impressed by 1-2 Switch. I was not impressed by the supposed lack of third-party support, because we had some guy from FIFA who walked on stage and talked about his son being named Luigi, and that was about it, right? And I'm kind of shocked. I'm shocked that the console released with, I believe, 7 or 8 games, one of which was 1-2 Switch, one of which was, what was it, what was that weird game that got released?
It was 1-2 Switch, Bomberman. And
Breath of the Wild, obviously.
Breath of the Wild, yeah.
Just Dance.
I think a Just Dance was out, maybe, yes. God, I don't. 1-2 Switch is the weirdest game out. I don't know what the other one would have been.
Yeah, it was just not a good lineup. It was not a strong lineup. We had Zelda, and a few days later, Snipper Clips came out, which was a great indie game. But that was about it. And we did not know what we were going to get, I don't know, even a month afterwards, we were sort of worried. It took about 30 days for us to finally start to get some announcements about future games coming out.
I was never worried. I knew they'd knock it out of the park.
I want to say I was pretty confident, but I think Nintendo did such a good job waiting the lineup for the first year that we're kind of spoiled. The people that kind of are now clamoring for Smash Bros. And Metroid. It's give them a break. Give them some months to prepare and make some other first-party games, because it's basically unheard of to get a Zelda game and a Mario game in the same year, let alone we got Splatoon, ARMS, Pokken, and Mario Kart, and countless other games, Xenoblade Fire Emblem. It's just like, it was a crazy good year for one console. And for them to replicate that, it's going to take nothing shy of a miracle. So I think, like, tamper your expectations a little bit, because that was just a sensational year, honestly.
Well, you know what's interesting is, so Breath of the Wild was initially made for the Wii U, and they delayed the game because it was supposed to get released like a year and a half prior to the actual initial release. But I believe they purposely delayed the game so they can release it at the same time as Switch. And the reason why I say this is because recently they stated that Super Mario Odyssey was always intended to be made and released for the Nintendo Switch. And that game, I'm assuming, went into production just around the same time as, like, Zelda was midway through development and or about to get released. You know what I'm saying? So, like, I honestly gotta believe they delayed the game, and I think it's the best thing they could have ever done, because needed that game to get released with the Switch.
Yeah, remember when they first introduced it at the Game Awards, and it just seemed like everything was really close, and all of a sudden they went kind of silent with it for a long time, and it never reappeared. Obviously, they had moved it over to Switch at that point, and they were planning on it being a Switch release, knew that they needed something big for the console. The Wii U was dying, and they didn't want Zelda to be some sort of swan song for the Wii U. They needed it to actually do something. They obviously knew they had a great game on their hands, too. So they knew they had something great on their hands, and they wanted to make sure that had the best introduction as possible. And being a launch game for their new console was that best introduction. But I think you're right, Reg. It did take like I don't remember when the first Nintendo Direct came that sort of telegraphed games like ARMS and Splatoon coming out. But, you know, and I think even Fire Emblem. But that first Nintendo Direct is what made, I think, people a lot more comfortable with their purchase, that things were going to be good. Because at that point, we were just kind of tiding ourselves over with little indie games.
Well, we did get that poster that was dropped, and I think it was dropped right after the Nintendo Direct, the first Nintendo Direct that after the Switch got released, in which it had just like a bunch of logos. It was like 77 logos, and they announced like 120 games would be released by the end of the year.
But that never means anything until you see the footage, right? Like the Wii U, I remember they touted all the different support partners they had. But until you actually see footage, you can't really feel super comfortable about it. And then finally they showed the footage, and I think everybody breathed a sigh of relief. Like, yes, we are getting a major game like every single month. So,
right. But they also released like a Mario Kart game, even if it was a port, you know, still with additional content. Mario Kart 8 Deluxe is, I think, a better version than the original Wii U version. That's like one of their biggest franchises. They released Super Mario Odyssey. They released a Zelda game. They released Pokken Tournament, which technically ties into Pokemon. They released Fire Emblem Warriors, which, you know, Fire Emblem is pretty huge. So they released a lot of big, big names year one. And you, Mario you cannot, plus Rabbids was the secret weapon.
You cannot undersell the insane install rates of some of those games. Like Mario Kart 8 Deluxe, that's still staggering how many copies they sold. Like, for it's almost, I want to say, half of all Switches, there's a copy of that game out there, which is just nuts.
I think Odyssey's even higher.
Odyssey beat it, yeah, I'm pretty sure. And, like, beating Zelda's one thing, but, man, that is just bonkers how high an install rate. And it wasn't packaged with the thing. It didn't cheat like Wii Sports. You dirty cheater, Wii Sports.
I would have bought Wii Sports. Let's admit it. We all would have bought Wii Sports anyway.
Wii Sports I love Wii Sports to this day. It's such a good game.
I would have bought it. If it didn't pack it in, I would have gotten it anyway. I would have had to figure it out. But I think one thing we also saw this year, though, like speaking of the indies, like by not having a great launch, people started exploring the indie section of the site a little bit. And the first year has told us that the Nintendo Switch is a great indie machine. Like, they have really put a lot of effort into making sure that they've gotten some quality indies, and developers have taken notice of the sales. I mean, you were talking about the attach rates on those big AAA games, but look at how well the little games have done it, you know, as well. Like, developers are reporting some of their best sales out of any console happening on the Switch. Like, this has become a common story now, where the Switch is a really good marketplace at the moment. I mean, who knows if it'll get flooded and become a big mess, but at the moment, it's still doing really well for indies.
But if you look at the top selling games on the Switch library every week, I would say about 9, 10, out of, maybe even more out of the top 15 are all indie games. Like, yeah, you will see an Odyssey, you will see Breath of the Wild, you will see maybe Mario plus Rabbids, but they're mostly indie games.
Well, and those are digital sales only. I mean, obviously, a lot of people buy the big games on cartridges, too. But, yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, it's a great platform for indie games. And I remember one of the first ones to come out was Comico. And, Tim, I think you picked that up as well. But
I did, yeah.
That was a great little indie title for $5 that I actually really enjoyed. I ended up 100%ing that game because I liked it so much. And that was sort of, that was the first time I remember thinking, like, oh, there's some other interesting things out here. And I started trying more and more games. The Switch became a great place for me to experiment before I bought Skyrim, for me to experiment with indie games.
Yeah. And I mean, like, again, like I was just talking about Rocket League for about 20 minutes earlier on. I know the game came out 2 years ago, but it's a kind of game that I could just play over and over again. It's a great party game. It's a great game to take on the go. It's a great game to play online. It's, I think it's got 40 plus million like users. It's just like having it on the Switch is just incredible. And I would prefer to play it on my Switch for whatever reason over my PlayStation. I don't know why, I just do.
It's 80% more fun on Switch.
Well, and here's the thing. I think indies have done so well because it's a handheld. And that's it right there. Because a lot of these are small game experiences. And even something like Rocket League, you don't have to play it. You don't have to sit there for 2 hours. You don't have to invest a ton of time into one session. I think that it being on a handheld, like, indies just make sense on a handheld like this, more so than they make sense on a big console. You can take them anywhere and play in a short gaming session. It's the perfect console for that.
And I think we saw this a lot at E3, Patrick, where it's a good way to demonstrate a game too. Like, rather than taking up a bunch of space, they just hand you a Switch. How many Switches did we see playing all sorts of games at E3? It was kind of staggering how young the console was. And yet it was the most popular console there. Everything was playing on the Switch. And so there was like this really, really cool unwritten story of how the community had really just accepted it and started to utilize it. Every indie dev was developing on the Switch and it became this haven for them.
Mm-hmm. It makes sense for so many of those types of games.
I think the system can become the biggest selling system of all time. And if not, it would for surely beat the Wii, and it's on track to beat the Wii. Like, I know it's only year one, but it's the fastest selling console in North America. That means Canada and the United States. And it's the fastest selling console in Japan. It's the fastest selling console in many European countries, including France. It sold well over 15 million, probably more at this point. It has not yet been out, but I mean, it'll be out by the time people are listening to this. It would have been out by a year, but March 3rd is the anniversary. So that's pretty amazing.
And I think that makes sense when you look at the console, what it is. It's hard to like anticipate that. But when you think about how well orchestrated its launch was and just how well Nintendo's home consoles do alongside their portable consoles, then you're really looking at what the Switch could truly be. If you took the Wii U plus the 3DS, then you're like, yeah, probably a little bit more on the money. Like, the 3DS has sold like hotcakes, and the DS even more before that. And so when the Switch gets to eat up both of those markets and be this Nintendo home console that it all is also available for on-the-go play, that's when you're like, this thing is really going to blow up. And Nintendo knew that and has been playing its cards right, really forcing, not that it's not selling well, but forcing the 3DS into the backseat.
And you got to remember, we still are missing three key ingredients here. First of all, the online service. Whatever it's going to be, whatever it's going to offer, we still have not yet got. That could be a game changer. Number two, cardboard. Cardboard.
Who saw that coming? Dear Lord.
Right. And number three, Pokemon.
Yeah, I mean, you still got to have Pokemon on it. There's still several other franchises that you can get on it. But I mean, I'm not going to say it's going to be a Wii beater, but
it's good. You want to place a bet? I will place a bet right now. I will bet a trip to France.
Oh, jeez. Wow.
A trip to France, huh? Right now, the odds are looking pretty good for me on that one, but I'm not a betting man. I don't want to have to eat my own shoe. Like Mike Warby. Well, of course, he didn't eat his own shoe. He ate a chocolate shoe, if I remember. So he kind of cheaped out of that one. But
or worse, buy a terrible Animal Crossing game.
Plus, I don't want to go back to France. Once in Paris was enough for me. But regardless, it's obviously, it's kicked the Wii U's ass, which is unbelievable how it outsold that console in 1 year. And it's clearly going to pass the GameCube. So, you know, I'm sure it'll pass every other. I would bet it's going to probably pass every other console, maybe, but the Wii. We'll see. We'll see. It would be amazing if it sold that much. And I think Nintendo has to do some things to get more people to sort of make more people less worried. Cloud saves will help a lot. I think people are worried about that right now, because if you lose your save data right now, you're screwed. There's a few other things they need to get. They need to make the online service, like, they need to actually list out all the features. Can't just have like some sort of ambiguous, well, it's going to offer these things. People need to know what they're going to be paying for. And, you know, this will all come over time. And I imagine they're obviously going to do that this year. And they've got lots of time to sell this console. But there are going to have to be some updates, too. You know, eventually there's going to have to be a new Nintendo Switch or something like that, because they're still going to have to keep in with modern game development if they want to last the 5 or 6 years, you know, that it took the Wii to sell that many consoles.
Right, but the thing is, Nintendo at least said, I think it was like last week, that they intend to keep this thing on the market for a minimum of 6 years. Oh. And Nintendo, if you're listening, if you want to sell more consoles, I'll give you a little trick. Offer some sort of like family pack, because there's a lot of people, myself included, who would love to have more than one Switch in their household, especially if you have more than one kid. But the problem is, if you have two Switches, right? Two Switches, again with the plural. Anyhow, if you have two Switches and you have two kids, or maybe three kids with two Switches, who cares? You have two Switches and you want to buy a game like Zelda, but the other kid wants Zelda, right? Like, if you can have some kind of like family pack share where you only have to buy the game once and you can share within that household, that would give me more reason to go buy three Switches for my three kids, because I'm still saving money at least on the games.
You know when that comes, Rick?
With Pokemon. Because no one wants to have to share it when there's a brand new Pokemon game. Both your kids gotta have one version and then the other version of Pokemon so they can trade. So you got that extra Switch in the household.
You know who the biggest competitor is to the Switch? The biggest competitor. Their only competition.
Phones.
No.
Don't say the 3DS.
Yes. 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 It sold 850,000 units in December. It had the biggest month in January since it first got released way back whenever. People are still buying the 3DS, and I think there's two reasons for it. I think, one, a lot of parents are just mistaking the Switch for the 3DS and just buying that system. And two, I think a lot of parents are buying that system because they just can't afford a Switch. So they're just getting their kids the 3DS because it's cheaper and they can't afford a Switch. I think that is the biggest competitor to the Switch. And I say this because I think secretly, as much as we all love the 3DS, we kind of want it to die, because I don't want another great game like Metroid Samus Returns or, I don't know, even like an Animal Crossing game to get released on that system and not on the Switch.
And I think it is being quietly retired. I think that Pokemon developing for Switch is a clear sign, like, they're moving on. They're always slow to do it, and they took a year before saying anything, or less than a year, I guess, before saying anything, and that's substantial news. Like, Pokemon is the hottest seller on the 3DS, or any mobile, portable gaming console. So, it makes sense. But, like, just them coming out and saying, like, yeah, we're moving to the Switch, that means, like, if you're going to keep playing Pokemon, you're going to have to invest in the Switch sooner rather than later. So I think you've already got people shuffling because of that, not to mention when those games actually launch. It's gonna mean some units sold.
Well, and don't forget, we're going to get Fortnite on the Switch very soon.
I'm wondering how much Fortnite could... I know it's really popular right
Dude,
now.
Dude, it's going to go on the Switch. I bet you a trip to France right now.
Oh, I'm not doubting it.
But on your Switch.
You really want to go to France, don't you?
I actually have... I have an all-expense-paid trip to Switch for two people, which is why I can afford to bet a trip to France. Anyhow, Fortnite's going to come to the Switch, man. I'm telling you. It's going to.
I don't doubt it. I'm just wondering how many units it could possibly move when people are happily already streaming on their Xboxes and PlayStations and probably PC. I don't actually know what Fortnite's on.
Well, I don't know if it'll move units, but still, just having... I mean, it's about expanding the library, right? Like, the more games you have on the Switch, the better it is. Because, I mean, like, let's face it. Like, Patrick doesn't want to play Night in the Woods. Maybe I don't want to play Doom, and you want to play Rocket League for whatever reason because you're crazy. You know what I mean? Like, everyone has their own, like, specific games and genres that they like. So the more games you have on the Switch, the more people you'll please.
Right, of course. Yeah, you want to have everything. No question.
I would prefer to have Fortnite over PlayerUnknown Battlegrounds.
Yeah. Undoubtedly, I think it's, in terms of, like, development process and transparency, I think they're doing a much better job right now. It's a much more approachable game. So that means something.
It's also free.
Speaking of, yeah, it's huge. Speaking of developers, I think that Nintendo just not only had tons of cash flowing in for what felt like the first time in ages, but I think they truly won 2017. It felt that way at E3. It felt like that with the Game Awards just a couple months ago, with Breath of the Wild still raking in countless awards. Most recently, we had, I don't even remember what awards, but that the one Dice. Guy from Dice. Nintendo, Dice, the Dice Awards. Dice. One guy from Nintendo received all of them, and it was like six different awards. So it's Nintendo is really positioned to continue to do well, and I think that now we have this opportunity for them to do well at stuff like E3 2018 and all of the... it's the start of the convention season, so... I think they're going to really show us what's to come, what there is to look forward to, and that means even more Switches sold. So, honestly, I couldn't have asked for a better year from the Switch. Any final thoughts?
I don't think it's going to be a better year or two, but I hope it's going to be almost as good, if not equally good. And in order for it to be as good or equally good, we're going to have to get something huge like Smash, which I don't think we're going to get right away, even if it's a port. Animal Crossing, which we might get, or we would need Metroid Prime 4, which I don't think is going to happen.
I think they need to talk soon. Our year two right now is feeling a lot like year one did at the beginning. So hopefully they will speak up soon and tell us what they have planned for the rest of the year, not just Kirby and tennis.
Yeah, they got to get all their duck hunts in a row.
Exactly.
Anyway.
Are you hinting at something, Tim? Do you have some insider knowledge?
My uncle works at Nintendo, guys. And, yeah. Duck Hunt Switch. Coming. Anyway, that does it for that segment. We're going to take a quick break. When we're back, we're going to induct some games into the Hall of Fame, so don't go anywhere. Welcome back to NXpress. We're in our final segment where we are going to play some new games into the Hall of Fame. If you go onto GoombaStomp.com right now, search for the Hall of Fame, you can see an amazing list of quality games that we have talked about specifically on this show that we think deserved a seat above all of the rest, and so they earned the title of Hall of Fame game. And now, like we do every 25 episodes, it's time to play some more games in the Hall of Fame. So who wants to go first? It's kind of a valuable position this time around.
Yeah, it is.
So I'm gonna step back, let one of you guys take it. I will take the hit if necessary. Wow. Sacrifice. Patrick, I guess you're going first then.
All right, so there's a part of me that I know I'm a big fan of baseball, and there's baseball, of course, has their Hall of Fame, and every year that you'd think that somebody would get elected every year, but that's not the case. Sometimes they don't let anybody in because of all the eligible candidates. There's nobody that they actually feel deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. And there, so when I was trying to think of what to put in here, there was a big part of me that was like, you know what? I kind of want to vote for no one. Like, we haven't necessarily, I figured you guys would cover whatever games that I, you know, that I may have missed, but I wasn't seeing a lot of like standout candidates. Although, all right, since you let me go first, though,
this is dating back to the very first episode.
I know, but believe me, okay. I've mined them all for in the past for every game.
So that for our listeners who do not yet know, every 25, 26 episodes, we record our Hall of Fame show in which we all choose a certain amount of games that we put into the NXpress Hall of Fame. But the rule is we would have had to have spoken about the game in our podcast, not just mention it in passing, but actually speak about it.
Exactly.
Like discuss it, review it, debate it. Hate it, loved it, whatever.
And that's what made it tough, because this past year especially, we didn't really do as many older games. We didn't look back at as many older games. We did some, but a lot of those games I'm not a huge Donkey Kong Country guy, and even though the first one I think belongs in the Hall of Fame, I don't necessarily say I'd put the other two in. However, all right, long story short, since I'm going first, I won't vote for nobody, and instead I'll vote for Donkey Kong Country Returns, which I think is one of the best action platformers, one of the best platformers of all time, and definitely deserves a spot in a Hall of Fame. It's about as finely crafted a platformer as can possibly be made.
I think that's probably a good choice. Well, there
goes my number one pick.
It was the best of the best. I mean, really.
There's another sequel to that game that probably deserves a spot, Rick. I think that's... It needed to be in there. It was going to get in there eventually, and we just started Donkey Kong Month.
Sorry, did you pick the one for the Wii or the original Donkey Kong Country Returns?
I picked Returns for the Wii. You're thinking... Okay. Do you mean Donkey Kong Country?
Yeah, so I just wanted to make sure you picked the Wii.
Yeah, I picked the Wii one, yes.
Okay. It's a good game. It's a great game. It's a fantastic game. It would have been my number one pick.
Dude, I'm surprised you didn't go with my number one pick, which I'm going to get out of the way right now because it's time. I waited long enough, and I think it deserves this seat, even though it's a young, young game.
So, I knew you were going to go with this. I knew you would pick this one, Tim, and I was a little unsure about putting it in there quite yet. But anyway, go ahead.
It has won enough awards, Patrick, and it is already received so many accolades and claims to greatest game of all time or one of the greats. So The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild is undoubtedly going on our Hall of Fame.
That was my number two pick.
I think it is less than a year old, but it is beyond earned it. And I sunk like 200 hours into that game. I have played enough to know that that game has not only going to have a lasting impression and influence the future of Zelda, but it's going to influence the future of gaming in general. I really think that.
I totally agree. It's going to influence gaming in general. It's going to influence open world games for
absolutely.
Sure. They
absolutely.
All have a new standard now.
Exactly. And so when I'm looking to someone like Bethesda, I'm literally just like, guys, announce Elder Scrolls 6 and I'll be a happy man. They've got a new high standard. Like, Breath of the Wild was open world and played smooth as butter. Skyrim plays great, but it's got some kinks, right?
Yeah. Look, from now on, you better be able to climb every damn thing in an open world. That's all I can say.
Right? In every game, period. If I can't climb, it's garbage.
I was going to pick Donkey Kong Country Returns for the Wii first. We did like a whole retrospective on Donkey Kong, and then Zelda was just like a given, right? But I'm going to go way back, dudes, way back. I am going to choose Duck Hunt.
Really?
Yes, we've talked about it because I've talked about it because remember I played Duck Hunt. I hooked up the Zapper. Remember I told you guys the story? I had to find a TV because it wouldn't work on my new TV, right?
Yeah.
So this game has been around, first of all, as long as the NES itself. It was originally packaged with the NES console for some years. I think it was even packaged with Mario Brothers at one point in time, Super Mario Brothers, the original.
Yes.
So it's been around for a long time. It's a classic. It is an amazing game. And in all honesty, I played it. I think it was like, I don't know if it was like, it was late last year, whatever. It was in 2017. I still have the original NES, I have the Zapper, I have Rob the Robot, and I got myself an old TV, and I played it, and my dad played it, and it was so much fun to this day. It's a simple game. Yes, you have a gun, you shoot ducks, there's this awesome dog, but it's just a fun game. For what it is, it's just an amazing game. Like, I can understand why so many people fell in love with this game at the time of its release. And of all the games released on any Nintendo system that required you to use some sort of, like, gimmick, gadget, gizmo, whatever you call it, like, this game, you know, you needed the NES Zapper, the Light Zapper, and it was the only, maybe not the only, but one of the best games in terms of, like, how it used this extra controller in order to make the game actually more fun. You know what I mean? Like, when people complain about motion controls or the power glove or... What was the power mat? Right? Was it the power mat?
Yeah, the mat.
Yeah, all of those things, right? Like, a lot of them just, like, were nonsense. But the actual gun itself, it was, like, a cool gadget. Like, and I'm telling you, it's still fun to play to this day. It's still hard. And it's amazing to even, like, watch my dad beat, like, one of the high scores because he's just so damn good at it. So, yeah, Duck Hunt. And I love, and I gotta say, I love the characters and the colorful visuals. I think it stands the test of time.
That dog is a jerk, by the way. He's awesome, but he's a total jerk, and everybody wanted to shoot him.
I always tried, yeah, for sure.
He laughed at you all the time.
But Nintendo, if you're listening to this, bring the Zapper back. I want to play Splatoon with it.
Well, here's the thing. So when Duck Hunt originally came out, you got to remember, like, I agree with this pick for a Hall of Fame choice because it was influential, and it, you know, it does hold up today, but even if it's not, it doesn't hold up as well as other Leica games. It doesn't matter because back then it was pure magic. I mean, it really still is.
It kind of bends my mind. I mean,
technology has come a long way since then, but back then that was an amazing thing to have in your home. They had things like that at the arcade and nobody really understood how they worked.
This was originally an arcade game.
Yeah, it was.
Yo, but this game is so... Dude, this game is so OG that even modern TVs can't handle it.
Right. I mean, it was a crazy thing to have in your home, and that blew people's minds back then. So the game really was kind of magic at the time that it released. And I don't mean in the play, just in the technology behind it. And it was a lot of fun, just a lot like the Wii was when you first picked one up. It was kind of crazy. You know, people were just sort of laughing that they could actually do this stuff.
Yeah.
Also, a lot of people don't give any credit or attention to the soundtrack, which was composed by Koji Kondo, and it's actually a really good soundtrack given the fact that, you know, it's just a game in which you shoot ducks.
I can't think of the score right now, but I believe it. If it was Kondo, then it's probably sensational. Anyway, Patrick, what's your next pick?
Okay, all right, so this is where it gets a little tougher. I believe we discussed this when we were discussing the top Wii U games of all time, so that counts, right? That's what I'm going for. But with its recent re-release on the Switch, I'm going to pick Bayonetta 2.
That's a good choice. I support this wholeheartedly.
I think it's just one of the most finely tuned action spectaculars out there. It's got the most gonzo action spectacle I've ever seen in any video game, and that alone made me, like, want to go keep playing further and further and further. But, like, forget the mechanics, which I'm not very good at. I'm not very good at the actual combo making, but that's fine. It allows you to play at whatever skill level you want, and you can switch back and forth anytime. So as soon as I started to get to feel better at the game, then I started to play it on higher difficulty levels. But it's a great... I think it might be the weirdest, most awesome action game I've ever played. I mean, you surf on top of an F-14, you turn into a panther that then has to dash through a tidal wave. You're constantly, like, you battle, like, you use your underworld avatar to fight some other guy's underworld avatar, like giant rock'em sock'em robots. There was so much crazy stuff going on in this game. If I remember right, don't you punch a dragon in the face? There was everything in this game. Just
you didn't it was even get around to talk about how you're regularly just fighting with your heels.
Well, yeah, guns on your heels seems like normal compared to what the rest of this game is. It's a giant fireworks display that was just gorgeous and entertaining. It was as entertaining as anything could ever be. I don't know what the story was. I don't think anybody could possibly comprehend what was going on in this narrative, but it didn't matter because everybody was stupid and everything, every single situation that was put in was crazy. And Bayonetta is an awesome character. I love Bayonetta as a character.
We have talked about it. I was kind of hoping we would finally get around to doing like a nice 45-minute review of the game, but I guess because it got released on a Switch, we should maybe do it in a few weeks. I think I'm gonna pick it up on a Switch. Regardless, I have it on the Wii U. I've played it, but we can call in a guest and actually dig in, talk about it for 45 minutes. If you haven't played this game, it's available on Switch now. It's totally worth your money and your time, and plus you get Bayonetta 1 as well, 2-for-1.
Mm-hmm. Which is very good game, but Bayonetta 2 is superior.
Yeah,
in every way.
It's the sequel, so it makes sense. But like, don't undersell Bayonetta 1 was at the time about as good as we thought it could get, and Platinum just proved us wrong. Good pick. So makes it my turn, and I have a lot of power right now because there are a lot of other new games that I think deserve a spot. I'm going to champion the game that I think you guys were underselling for the last couple of months, and it's still super young, 5 months old, but I put it in my top 5 favorite Mario games of all time, Super Mario Odyssey. I think this game is sensational. It sold more copies than Zelda for the Switch, and I think it kind of makes sense. It's super approachable, super family-friendly, but just some of the best 3D platforming that I've experienced in a long time. Open the doors to what a Mario world could be with stuff like New Donk City. Just sensational. And I am really, really looking forward to the future of Mario because of this game. So, yeah, I'm gonna give Mario Odyssey a spot in our Hall of Fame because it will be remembered as one of the great two guys. You don't see it.
Wait a minute. I love this game. All I was saying is that I'm not as in love with this game as you are because I wouldn't put it in my top 5 Mario games. Like, that's like you asking me to compare my take my 10 favorite movies of all time and compare the one I like the least to the one I like the most. Like, it's an amazing game.
Look, I have a co-op podcast.
Yeah, and your co-host hates the game.
And he doesn't like platformers and he's stupid. So but more to my point, if you stripped away the multiplayer side of 3D world, it would be a sensational game. The more time that passes, though, the more I'm like, you know what? I think I had more fun playing Odyssey all the way through.
So I'm like, I never played the multiplayer of 3D World, and yet I would consistently go back to that game. I'd pick it up a few months later and play through a lot of it again. I beat the game a couple of times. I never 100%ed it because I just wasn't good enough to tackle some of those later stages. But I got pretty close. And I didn't want to invest. I was having too much of a blast just sometimes replaying old stages. Odyssey, the longer I get from it, the more I realize I'm not going to say I'll never go back to it, but I have very little desire to pick it up ever again. The more time that passes, the less I like Odyssey. This might be the one that I don't think that Odyssey will be looked at as one of the greatest Mario games of all time. I think Odyssey will be a blip on the map. I think it'll fade from people's memories fairly quickly. I think it had a lot of razzle-dazzle.
Whoa, what?
Yeah, I think it had a lot of razzle-dazzle, and it did a good job in that respect. But I think it's on the very, very low end of Mario games. I think it'll be like right around... It'll probably be remembered like right around the new Super Mario Brothers.
No way.
It's fine. Like, I think in the end, people are not going to go back to this one. Like,
look, there are countless people just like me who got literally 999 moons. And then we're like, man, I wish there was more for me to do in this game.
Yeah, I know there are definitely some big fans of it. This is just my intuition. I'm not saying this is a bad game. I really liked Odyssey a lot too, my first time playing through. But I think it's a very shallow game, and I think once you're done with it, a lot of people are pretty much that's it. You're just done with it. It was it gave me like 25 hours of gameplay, and it was very entertaining throughout that. But I just don't think there's a lot of reason to go back. I've never had the inkling to, and that's the first time with a 3D Mario game or even a 2D Mario game that I've never had the inkling to go back to it.
What does Splatoon have to do with this? Okay, sorry.
Speaking of games I don't want to go back to, by the way, Splatoon 3, you just lost a customer thanks to Splatoon 2.
Don't say that. You're hurting my soul. No, I think there's something to be said. The transformations over power-ups, I think it's sensational. I want more of them. I hope we get a lot more of that. I think the world's opening it up and kind of returning to the Mario 64 style of play was just like, I felt like it was for players like me who grew up on the 64 and that was their favorite console. Because I just played so much dumb Mario 64 where I had already beaten the game. And I just went around and surfed on a Koopa shell because that's something I could do. So I feel like this game was just right up my alley. It was all about exploration, finding every little secret in the world, and then mastery of those techniques. And I felt so good every time I would do the throw your hat, dive onto it, and dive again, like super long jump. I was like, this is what Mario needed, like for speedrunners and for players like me who wanted to just demonstrate their prowess in a platform like this. Sensational. I love it.
Man, I have two games I want to choose, but I'm only going to choose one because we're only picking two each today. So I'm going to go way back. Now, Tim, you do a podcast called?
Game Boys.
And what is the launch game for the Game Boy?
You talking Tetris right now?
Yeah, maybe.
Wait, that was the launch game, was it?
Well, it was, yeah, it was a launch. It came with, it got released.
It eventually got packed with the Game Boy, but I thought it came out after the Game Boy had already released.
Whatever. I can't really speak to this. I just remember always having Tetris with it.
Yeah.
Dude, I don't know anyone who had a Game Boy that did not have Tetris. Everyone, the point is,
it was like mind-bending how popular Tetris was.
Okay, yeah, it did not come with a Tetris was a launch game. Yes, in North America it was a launch game.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah. I mean, it's safe to assume everyone who listens to this podcast, anyone that's ever played a video game knows what Tetris is. And most people do associate the game with Nintendo because of the Game Boy system, at least here in North America. When you think Tetris, you think Game Boy. And that is the game that I think, and most people think, helped the Game Boy become such a success. Everyone picked up the Game Boy specifically for Tetris. I knew people who had a Game Boy, and the only game they owned, even like 2-3 years later, was Tetris. That's all they ever played. This is like one of the greatest games ever made. Like, it's not just like one of the greatest games released on a Nintendo console. It's one of the greatest games ever made. I would put it on like top 10.
Oh yeah. Ever conceived. Like one of the most brilliant games of all time, for sure.
It's one of the greatest puzzle games ever made. And it's amazing how the creator, if I'm pronouncing his name correctly, it's Alexey Pachitnov. Anyways, he never actually got any royalties from the game for like the first like 30 years until he finally went to court.
Because it was communist Russia, dude.
Exactly. Yeah. The Russians took all of the money away from him.
He designed all creative things were owned by the state. Creative properties were owned by the state.
It's insane.
I think it's like one of the best partnerships Nintendo ever made in the history of the gaming. Sorry, in the history of Nintendo, but also like one of the greatest partnerships in the history of gaming, period.
Nintendo and the Ruskies.
Yeah.
The Reds.
And it's funny because Nintendo, I don't know what exactly is the problem with Nintendo in Russia, but they don't really sell consoles throughout Russia.
No, you're right. I don't think you never hear about like sales of Nintendo in Russia.
Is that on Nintendo or is that on Russia?
Could I don't be. Know. I don't think the Switch is available in Russia yet.
Yeah. Is that on Nintendo or is that on Russia? I don't have any insider information about Russia. Tim.
I don't know, Tim. I watch the American
Tim. Yeah.
Wait,
better
I was talking about Mario. Red.
But you know, like when you think of a game that becomes a phenomenon, like you think of like Pokemon, maybe like the original Super Mario, like there's few games, right? This is one of those games. Like it just blew up. It, like out of nowhere, everyone was talking about Tetris. Everyone was playing Tetris. It was on the news. It was on TV shows. It was on game shows. It was like on talk shows. People were having like therapy sessions with Tetris.
It was the first Wii Sports because you had people of all ages actually playing.
Or I think an even stronger example would be Brain Age on DS. You remember when that blew up? And like you can still
see that was a big one too.
You can still see grannies playing Brain Age on a DS, and it's like, yeah, you got to keep that mind sharp. And this was like the predecessor to that. Mm-hmm. This was like everyone played it.
For all you Switch lovers, Tetris laid the brick for the foundation of handheld gaming that Nintendo dominated and is known for to this day. Without Tetris, we may not have a Switch.
It's very true.
It sounds like he could be stretching, but it also could be true. It just really helped solidify the concept of a portable gaming machine. And while other games would go on to really demonstrate what fun could be had on the Game Boy, cough, cough, Pokemon Red Blue, it really instantaneously sold the world on take this mini arcade thing and have fun wherever you are. All right, that's a really cool pick. I'm kind of surprised we didn't put it in there because I feel like when we originally started, it was like Donkey Kong, Super Mario Bros., Mega Man. Kind of surprised it wasn't there. Anyway, now Tetris can sit alongside true classics like Breath of the Wild. That does it for our show, though. Another long one. Thank you guys for listening. Patrick, thank you for joining us. Where can we find you online?
You can find me at goombastomp.com, of course. Usually writing for Sword Cinema, but sometimes for the video game section as well. I kind of flip back and forth. And, of course, you can message me at Twitter, at Sorted Cinema.
Yeah. And, Ricky, how about you?
You can find me on Twitter. It's Goomba Stomp. I think I changed my Twitter handle. I think it's Goomba Stomp. And now the last O is spelled with the number 0 because Goomba Stomp is taken. It's complicated. Anyways, the link's on the website. Goomba Stomp, okay? Just spell Goomba Stomp and think the last O is spelled with the number 0. We have a newsletter now over at Goomba Stomp, the website, that is. And you should all subscribe. You can find the links to the subscription feed on our website. I send out a newsletter every Sunday morning, which basically has a list, or it's a roundup of all of, not all, but some of the great articles that get published throughout the week over on our website. And I usually include the link to this very podcast you're listening to, and sometimes the Game Boys podcast. Do you support our website? By supporting our website, you can subscribe to our newsletter, share our articles across the internet, and give us a rating on iTunes. Because you know what I hate about iTunes? iTunes does not give statistics. So we do not yet know, and we will probably never, ever know, how many people listen to the podcast on iTunes. But, you know, it would be nice to at least get ratings on iTunes because it helps make our podcast more visible for some reason. iTunes is like, it's an evil, evil, evil system. It's owned by Apple. They're buying healthcare now. They're going to control everything soon. Them and Amazon.
Yeah, but we seriously can't stress enough how evil Amazon is. Just kidding.
No, we're not.
No, we're not. I live in Seattle. Don't even talk to me. Amazon's the worst. Good. But you really should leave us a review and a rating. It really launches a podcast to the next level and would help us find new ears to inhabit, and that would be huge so that we can do cool stuff like get game reviews or go to conventions so that the show is better rounded, and we can play more. That'd be cool. Anyway, I'm Tim Mason. You can find me at The Freemason, M-A-I-S-O-N, on Twitter, or N-Express Nintendo on Twitter as well, where I'm doing a lot of talking about video games. Most recently, celebrating Pokemon Day and waiting for the next Overwatch hero. Where are my people at? Anyway, thank you guys for listening. We sincerely appreciate it. Thanks for enjoying the Hall of Fame. Go check that out on Goomba Stomp right now, and look out for the new entries coming in soon. That's been it for N-Express. We'll talk to you guys more next week.